welcome to Building the Game, a documentary podcast. Today is Monday, February 25th, 2013, and this is episode 39. My name is Rob. In the studio with me is Jason. We also have one of our wonderful, exciting, good friends on the line with us. We have Chevy Dodd. How's it going, man?
It's going great.
Great. Thank you so much for hanging out with us. Thanks for hanging out with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Rob has been drinking a lot before this. That's totally untrue.
I got too excited because of our awesome guest.
Yes.
Oh, thanks.
We were fortunate enough. We've known Chevy from Twitter quite a bit, but I got to meet him for just a couple minutes at Gen Con when he was demoing Scallywags. Mm-hmm. And so we know you're very active, Chevy, with designing, and we're talking about designing on Twitter. And so we thought you'd be a great person to come on and help guest host for an episode.
Thanks. Yeah. I actually probably like talking about designing more than I like designing. So,
well, great.
Good news. We're going to let you do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, what you been playing?
This is kind of sad. Well, it's not sad, I guess. My group has been really famished. That's not even the right word. I don't know. My group has been really into the DC Heroes deck builder lately. Like, we show up, and it's like it hits the table. And while I like the game, I'm kind of over it already.
I don't know anything about it.
It's Ascension. Essentially, it is an Ascension clone that is even easier to teach and play than Ascension. So I love Ascension, but Ascension with, like, four people is kind of... it's not my favorite. Hmm. Like, to me, Ascension's kind of a two-player game. DC Deck Builder is more of a four-player game. Like, it's not good two-player. I tried it two-player, and it's okay, but it's much better with more people.
Okay.
So, very simple to teach. If you know Ascension, you could probably just pick it up and play it without even having to think. But it adds avatars. That's the cool part about it. So, everybody kind of has a special... You know how... If you're familiar with Ascension... There are factions, so if you have a bunch of Mechana stuff, you want to try and get more Mechana stuff. If you have Lifebound stuff, you want to get more Lifebound stuff. Well, with the DC game, you're a hero, so maybe you're Batman. And Batman gets better if you play equipment. So when you're buying cards, you're going to try and buy equipment. Or like the Flash lets you draw an extra card anytime you draw a card, so you want to get cards that let you draw cards. And so having your avatar kind of put you on a path to victory without forcing you down that path.
Now, how many different avatars are there?
I think there's 7, 8, something like that.
Oh, cool.
Okay.
Basically the whole Justice League.
Now, does that change what you're playing? Like, does that change the decks, or does that just change
you get to keep that avatar in front of you, and it has a power. And then it's just like Ascension, where you have a central deck, and the row that you can buy from, and then you have your deck starts off with 7 punches, which are just 1 power cards, and then 3 weaknesses, which are just nothing. They're just trash cards.
That's cool.
So there's only 1 money type, and then which is power. So it's actually it plays really smooth.
That's got to play even easier if there's only, because with Ascension there's 2 different ways you can do stuff. You can buy it or you can kill it, correct?
Yeah. So this is just one way. And then there's also, in addition, there is a stack of supervillains. And that's how the game ends. Once the stack of supervillains is gone, the game's over. And they're pretty hard to kill. Like, they'll have, you know, high cost. So you have to get a bunch of power to beat them. So it's kind of a player-driven end game. Hmm. And it ends pretty quick. If you play it the way that I think they tell you to use... 8 supervillains, and I think the game comes with 12. We usually play with all 12, just because it feels like you get to exercise your strategy a little better. But it plays really well. It's actually really fun. But that, man, I'd say ever since Christmas, that's been the game we've played. That and Tichu. We love Tichu, so.
Tichu? I don't know that.
You don't know Tichu?
No. Should I? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to offend you.
No, I thought that, like, Tichu is like the quintessential gamer trick-taking game. There's an old drinking game that says a dirty word, something Hole. Have you ever played that game?
Sure have.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so, okay, so it's the same game where if I play a pair, you have to play a pair, yada, yada, yada. You know, if I play a straight, you play a straight. But there's a couple special cards. And so it actually is probably one of the best trick-taking games available. Hmm. And we play it constantly.
Check that out.
Yeah, it's actually really, really good. So those are two. Like, honestly, since Christmas, I would say those two games might be all we've played. Oh, we played some... No, we played Eclipse. Have you played Eclipse?
No. Mm-mm.
Oh, man. That game is like... They pulled it out of the box, and it was the most scary thing I've ever seen. There's just like 300 chits in this box, and you're like, what is all this? And then you get your player mat, and your player mat, there's this huge area of numbers. And then you get your bag full of stuff, and my friend's like, all right, now each one of these cylinders, which there's like 100 of, goes on your mat. And you're like, what is all this? I mean, it was the most overwhelming experience ever when we opened this box. It was just... Like, oh, it was mind-boggling. But as soon as he explained the game and we took our first turn, it was like, actually, this game is really easy, but amazing. So that blew me away. I was totally expecting this to be some like long, drawn-out drudge fest when he opened the box. But after we got going on that, it was like, man, this game's rocks. It's actually really fun.
Oh, that's awesome.
Okay.
Yeah.
So three games to check out. Though I've played Ascension.
Yeah.
I don't think, Rob, have you played?
No, I haven't. No.
So, okay.
So I need to.
I at least am 1-4.
Yeah.
You're 0-4. Wow.
Right. And, well, we've never talked about any of those three games on the show before.
No.
Ever.
No, we haven't. So.
Wow.
Good job, Chevy.
Yeah.
This is great. This is why we like to have guests to bring new stuff to us.
Yeah. Well, you know. But that's it. Yeah. I honestly, I don't think I've even play tested anything since Christmas either of my own. I play tested a few other people's games.
So. Yeah. Now, were you at the Unpub event or not?
I did not get to make it that weekend. I was busy.
Okay.
So I will be in Milwaukee's Proto Spiel next month.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That'll be fun.
At some point, Rob and I have to start making more conventions.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough with our day jobs and just life, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Life gets in the way. Well, but I was offered free room while I'm in Milwaukee, so I can't pass it up.
Oh, that's
okay.
Great.
Yeah, I would probably go if that were the case.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
So, hey, why don't we move on to the mechanic of the week?
Yeah.
And Chevy was nice enough to bring a mechanic. Go ahead, Chevy, take it away.
Yeah, what you got, man?
So, drafting.
Drafting.
I love drafting, but I feel, as an ex-Magic player and an ex-trading card game player, I always love draft events. But in games, it's always left me feeling a little bit cheated.
Can you define drafting for us? Just
I want to say there's a common pool. So it could be either card drafting, just like a Magic, where we would each get a set of cards. I pick one, pass it to you, or Seven Wonders. If you played Seven Wonders, it's the same thing.
Okay.
And we keep passing cards and picking until we have a set number of cards or whatever. But I also consider things like Ascension or DC Deck Builder, the buying mechanic is almost like drafting. It's like a Rochester draft in Magic is the same on the table, and we each pick one. So we all get to see what each other's taking. That's also a type of draft.
Yeah. Another game that comes to mind with the standard draft would be Citadels. Have you tried that?
Yeah. Yeah. So Citadels, picking your role.
Yeah. It's role selection, but I mean, you're doing that via drafting.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So Citadels actually is probably one of my favorite drafting games. I think that because in that game, the draft is just a real quick little thing every round. It's not the game.
Right.
I really like Seven Wonders, but there's so much downtime between passing hands constantly every round. It just gets kind of monotonous, and it's almost like an exercise, like literally physical exercise, to move these cards constantly while you're trying to pick a strategy.
Hmm.
And you feel pressured if you're the guy taking your time trying to, like, you know, plan.
Yeah. Yeah, see, that's why I often kind of don't really like that part of a game if you start doing that I always feel like, oh man, I gotta hurry up and pick something without really having time to think about what I want.
That's, yes, it's because it's almost like simultaneous action, right?
Yeah.
So you feel like if you're the guy who's holding everybody else up, then you're the guy who's holding everybody else up. Nobody wants to be that guy.
Right.
Like, don't be that guy.
And I think that's another strong thing for Citadels, is that as long as you've played the game a couple times, that really should never happen. You
right.
should pretty much have your kind of go-to list in your head of who you're going to pick. You know what I mean?
Right.
I think the best thing about Citadels with drafting is being like the second player, because you're trying to figure out what the first person took and what got, you know, what just got dumped.
Oh, yeah.
That's always funny. You get a lot of good looks out of that. Where
exactly. When you get that card, you're like, you passed me this? So what did you take? You know? I got this? What did you get? I don't even understand right. what you would do. Why'd you pass this?
My least favorite one is when you get it and it's missing the assassin and the thief, because those are the first two cards that come up. So you're like, well, you have one of them.
Yep.
Crap.
Yep.
Am I going to die or are you going to take my money?
Yeah. So that we played Seasons, I think. That was before Christmas, though. Seasons was released at Gen Con. It was kind of this big thing. You know, everybody was like, oh, my God, you got to play this game. And I think the group of us, four of us played it one evening for about 3 hours for the first game. And it was probably it wasn't an unenjoyable experience, but not because of the game. The game held us together, so we all talked for 3 or 4 hours, but I really walked away from that like, I don't even know if I played a game or if we just sat around and talked. So I had a friend who was like, oh, it's the greatest game ever. So he got it and we played it, and I don't know, it
ringing endorsement here.
You know, that's you're not the first person to say this about that game, though. I heard I can't remember who, but somebody else told me basically the same thing you're saying about this.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I think as a two-player game, it would be perfectly fine. If you add any more than two people, it just falls apart, in my opinion. You've got a drafting mechanic in the beginning that pretty much determines who wins the game. You almost don't even need to play the game. Seriously.
So you're like, we could save 3 hours.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's just draft and see who wins.
It's a magic-like draft. You get dealt 9 cards. You pick one, you pass. You pick one, pass, and you do that until you have 9 cards. The problem is the deck of cards that everybody's dealt their 9 cards from, the cards are not even remotely balanced. So you have some cards that are actually negatives, like they will hurt. And you have some cards that are amazing. So if I'm a player who gets dealt 9 cards that are all terrible, and you get dealt 8 okay cards and 1 amazing card, and you take the amazing card and I have to take a terrible card, we already know who won. Like, let's just stop playing. There's no point in continuing this exercise.
And is it a draft where no one knows what you're taking, or
yeah you just take one, pass your pack to the left, and you keep passing until everybody has one. So yeah, you basically, nobody knows. So after that, so you do that, and you get your 9 cards, and then the game starts. So then it's got this cool dice mechanic. So you roll, I think it's 5 dice, or, you know, 1 plus the number of players or something like that. Roll some dice, and then everybody drafts one of those dice. So if I roll the dice on my turn, I get to pick one, and then you pick one, and then you pick, and we go around the table. So there's this dice drafting every turn. And that's really that way that you get to see, oh, I'm going to take this, you took that, so we know what each other's doing there. But if that really, knowing what each other's doing doesn't really matter. It's almost like have you played Stone Age?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, so it's almost like the cards where you roll the number of dice equal to the number of players and everybody gets something. It's almost the exact same thing with this mechanic. You roll these dice, and it's obvious which one you should take. Like, it's not even remotely a decision.
Right.
It's like, oh, I'll take that one, and then you'll take that one, you'll take that one. We'll just go around the table. So I think the game is – the thing about this game that intrigues me is that there's about 15 different things going on, and none of them really correlate to each other, but they all correlate to each other, and it's balanced. Like, it actually – other than the draft stuff, it all works. But it feels like it's trying to do a little bit too much with the drafting. Like, you didn't really need to have all this. We could have just rolled some dice or just taken the dice out. You don't even just throw them away.
Hmm.
Or I don't know.
Well, heck, if the drafting is going to be that big of a deal in the game and it's going to hurt the game that much, you could also just deal randomly 9 cards to every person.
Yeah, like
that would be just as fair, right?
Yeah, basically, yes. I think it would be even more fair. But people like drafting. There is a certain skill to drafting that is playing the other players, and I love games that allow me to play the other players. And so there are people who can draft very, very well because they know what everybody else is going to do before that person does it, and that lets them set up their future turns. So I get that. Like, I get the strategy of that. But, yeah, I think if we just all got dealt 9 random cards, it would be just – it would be the same game. It really wouldn't change much at all, honestly.
So, Chevy, I'm getting mixed signals here from you. You say you really like drafting, but then you're talking about all the ways that it's terrible. So
that's because I've got the way I'm going to make it better.
Oh.
See, I've come up with a way to make it better, and this this idea has stuck in my head. And so
we certainly understand the feeling of that. I mean, as you know from the show, a lot of times we say, this mechanic kind of sucks.
Yeah.
How can we make this mechanic suck less or even maybe be fun?
Yeah.
But I mean, to be fair, I think drafting is a good mechanic.
It's a great mechanic. I think
you need to, you know, first of all, having it basically decide a 3-hour game in that initial draft, that's just stupid. That isn't, I mean,
well, to be fair, Seasons is not normally 3 hours. There is a tense amount of adult beverages and way more talking than should have been, you know, required. It plays in about an hour, probably.
But I mean, even if you're deciding an hour-long game in the space of the first 10 minutes, I would still argue that is less fun than it should be.
Yeah.
I like drafting when it's kind of just, you know, a dose of drafting. Kind of like Citadels, where there's a lot of playing, but every round you get to, you know... And I guess the cool thing about what makes that drafting better, too, is it's part of the role selection. So
I
think that's what makes it. And you're never, I guess there's less to it, too, right? Like, so I draft the wrong guy in Citadels. Oh, I took the merchant. That was stupid. Now somebody killed me.
Right.
Hey, you know what? Try again next turn in 5 minutes when it's back to role selection again with the draft.
Yeah, I think that draft is very forgiving in Citadels. You can really screw up your turn, and it's like, oh, okay, well, I'll just take 2 cards or whatever. No big deal. It's definitely not forgiving in Seasons. That's the other thing. The version of drafting in Seasons is very dependent on you knowing the cards. So the person who has played the game the most has a seriously huge advantage.
Hmm.
Way bigger advantage. And so given 4 players of equal skill and equal knowledge of the game, the draft probably does decide the game. Like I would really just throw it out there and say it does. 90% of the time the draft decides the game. If you have even a little imbalance, if there's one person who's played the game more than a couple times and 3 new people, there is zero chance the 3 new people can win. It just can't happen. It's not one of those games that you can beginner's luck into. It just simply is not going to happen.
Okay.
And that frustrates me. So I like drafting, but I think I like the Rochester draft. I think I like the Ascension style draft a little better. Put everything on the table and then we each take one.
Okay.
To me, that's more of a strategic draft instead of a tactical draft. So I separate those two terms, meaning that like strategy means I have a long-term goal, whereas tactics means I'm reacting to the present situation. They're tied together, but they're two separate things.
Sure.
So if I can see what I'm doing and what the other players at the table are doing, that's going to affect my decision differently than if I can only see what I'm doing and guess at what my opponents are doing.
Okay.
So the everything out there on the table draft is what has intrigued me and is what has stuck in my head for the past few months. And I purposely didn't develop this idea, mainly because I was on other projects, but also because I thought it would be a good topic to discuss here. So,
okay, cool. Now, before we roll into your pitch here, I want to make sure that we talk about more positives here for drafting.
Oh yeah. Yeah. No.
So can we name some other games that maybe that do it right and talk about what they do well other than Citadels and Ascension? I mean, where else do we like it?
DC Heroes, I hear, has a really good Rochester draft.
Yes, I don't know where I heard that. Somebody mentioned that to me.
Yeah, no, that's a good one. I'm trying to think of other games that use draft. You just caught me like I should have done my homework.
Nightfall Rochester draft.
Yeah.
Look at the whole Puerto Rico role selection family. Any of those games, the role selection mechanic in Puerto Rico is a draft. It's that simple. You could argue and say that it's fairly obvious what you need to do each turn, but it's still a draft. You're still picking something from a common pool,
mm-hmm.
and once you take it, nobody else can have it. I think it works really well in those types of games also.
It's interesting that we've kind of fallen upon this, that role selection done generally as a draft is very tied to drafting. Mm-hmm. You know, that never even occurred to me before.
No, nor I.
When we've talked about role selection or variable player powers, that I mean, like, that can be really tied to drafting.
Sure.
Depending on how you're doing it. So,
that's
interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I think, like you said, in Citadels, it's very obvious.
Right.
And, you know, it's just a different style of draft in Puerto Rico or San Juan or.
Right.
Race for the Galaxy, not so much because we can all take the same thing, but, you know.
Yeah.
Cuba. I really love Cuba, so it's got a role selection also. Right. Or even Stone Age. You could say Stone Age is a type of draft. You're putting your workers out in places that other people can't put them, but that's muddling it up. That's really mean.
Right, because, I mean, that's technically
that's
worker placement.
Really pushing it there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it is interesting to kind of show how many of the mechanics are actually like each other, but we give them different names to be mm-hmm. more specific.
Sure.
You know,
try and differentiate and granulate.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
The thing that intrigues me, to say positive things about draft, I like it when I can use the draft as a means of manipulating the other players.
Okay,
So in Puerto Rico, for instance, I might take a defensive draft. I might take a role that's terrible for me just so you can't have it. And that might just infuriate you to the point that you make a mistake your next turn that I get to reap the benefits of. And so to me, having the ability to do stuff like that is more important than what happens in the game state as I take that choice. Just being able to mess with you is way more important to me. And so those open drafts, that really works well. If we're doing a closed draft, if we're doing that, like picking a card, if I have a guess as to what you're doing, if, you know, you're sitting left of me and we've passed the cards and I kind of have an idea of what you're taking, then maybe I can screw with you a little bit, but it's a lot harder. You know, and if we're all doing that, then it's really hard because it's like this blind, you might as well just shuffle the cards and take one at random.
Yeah. So what I'm hearing you say here, and I think I agree with this, that the drafting is great and really, really works well when it's helping you play against the other guy, not play against the game.
Right.
Yeah. So that's when drafting is great, when it's facilitating that interaction with the other players.
Yes.
And not necessarily following steps A, B, C because the rule book told me to.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. I think we got somewhere with that conversation.
I feel like we made some progress there.
Right on.
Chevy's like, I want to talk about drafting because it's awesome. And we're like, really? And he's like, nope, I hate it.
No, it's terrible. I can't believe you fell for that.
Next time we won't fall for it if you're like, hey, I'm going to talk about roll and move because it's awesome.
Hey, yeah, I you know what? I could argue my very first ever game design was a roll and move, and that game was amazing. I'm just going to say it. I was also like 10, so...
There are ways, and Rob and I have mentioned this before, you know, there are ways to make roll and move not terrible.
Yeah.
Just none of the designers in the 80s or 90s who were making mass market board games understood that that was possible.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, hey, side topic. What was that first game that you designed when you were 10 years old?
It was actually was I 10? I was a little older, I think, because I think it was like seventh grade. we had to read The Hobbit, and then we had to do a project, and we got to just do like whatever you want. And so mine was, I'm going to make a game. And it, so I made a board, and it was just basically stepped through the portions of The Hobbit, and you landed on spaces and drew cards, and you could save some of those cards to use later. Some of them were like immediate events. So it was kind of a chutes and ladders, but with player, you had cards so that you could affect the game state, not just be subject to it.
Yeah. Right on. Yeah, that's cool. I think my first game that I designed, I was probably younger than 10. I made a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles board game.
Of course you
and
did.
It was about you had to start in your lair in the sewers, and I think you had to get up to the top of the skyscraper to save April O'Neil from Shredder. And
that sounds amazing. I would play that game.
It was awesome. It was great. I hand drew the board myself, and I was very proud of it. I think I played it twice with my mom.
Oh yeah, my Hobbit game was the same way. I hand drew it all, and actually, I remember taking a like a white like shirt box, like you would wrap for Christmas. That was the game box, and I remember drawing the Hobbit from the cartoon version of the Hobbit on it.
Oh yeah,
so
awesome. Yeah.
I was proud of that. My second game I ever designed was a role playing game, and. Well, I still have the books, actually. I have like 4 or 5 source books.
Wow. So,
that you wrote for the game?
Yeah, I did. Like, man, they're pretty much just like charts, hit charts, and I mean, you know, weapons. I went full on crazy with it. It was it was about anthropomorphic robots in space. And I remember it was hilarious because I had an old Archie comic book from like the 60s. And in the back was an ad for like Robotech or something like that.
Oh, yeah,
exactly. And so being a sheltered, you know, East Coast, you know, child, I had no idea that Robotech was still a thing. And so I was like, that's a cool name. And so that's what I called it, Robotech. Like, you know, I was like, there's no way that's still around. So I'll just use that name, you know.
That's funny. A lot of the stuff I worked on, like when I was younger, writing and designing and stuff, was just all stolen. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that one of the first things I wrote was I rewrote the Ninja Turtles movie. But it was really just the Ninja Turtles movie, just written in my words.
Right.
Awesome. As a story on lined paper, wide ruled.
We can, yes. You got to start somewhere, right?
It's true.
Yeah. Well, so hey, we've been teasing your new game idea here. So let's go ahead and roll into to practicing the pitch. And what do you got, man?
All right, well, I don't have a name for this game, so we're going to have to come up with that part, too.
Okay, deal.
Here's the basic concept. It would be a semi-cooperative game, similar to, say, the game that I just forgot the name of.
Oh, I love that game.
Wasn't Seasons.
No. It's a... whatever. Doesn't matter. So a semi-cooperative game... I can't remember. Cutthroat Caverns. There we go. Sorry. Cutthroat Caverns is a semi-cooperative game where the players are up against the dungeon, and you're trying to defeat the dungeon. In order to do that, you have to enlist the help of your other players, but you also need to be the only one surviving at the end if you want to win.
Got it.
So if you backstab them too early and kill them, chances are you won't survive the dungeon. So a similar concept would be, I have no theme. I have about 30 theme ideas. So we'll just talk about the mechanics.
All right.
In the game. We'll start with a theme. My original theme idea was, hobbits running from Nazgul. Okay. Obviously I'm not going to use that.
We got to start somewhere though,
but this will give you an idea of what I'm thinking.
Sure.
So it's an adventure game or just an escape game where you're attempting to elude an enemy. The drafting mechanic is pretty much the entire mechanic of the game. So what you would do is deal out N plus X cards, number of players plus maybe 2, onto the table, and then we each draft one in round order. So first player, go around. The cards would be dual-purpose cards. So on each card would have a player action that says, you know, move 2 spaces or whatever. you know, you're hiding in a bush, you know, whatever. the other action on the card would be a game state action. So basically what would happen is we would all draft a card for ourselves, and we would immediately use that action. The remaining cards, because we dealt out more than the number of players, are what the game plays against us.
Oh.
So maybe it's, you know, somebody gets spotted, one of the Nazgul spots us, or, you know, an attack or something like that. So that was my initial theme. I think working through it a little bit in my head, I thought maybe it would be better to have an investigative type game. I don't want to say Cthulhu because that's like the go-to.
Yeah.
For, you know, but I was thinking like maybe even just like an investigative journalism or like a crime scene investigation or something. So as each of the players, we are trying to discover things. And so in my head, what I've got is maybe we each have skill sets. So I'm good at science and I'm good at math or whatever. And you're good at guns and punching people.
Of course I am.
Guns and punching. Obviously.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Isn't everybody?
So, yeah. So I'm going to draft the cards that help me with my science and math, and you're going to draft the cards that help you with your guns and ammo. But the cards that are affecting us, at the end, I want cards that deal with science and math because I can easily handle them. And you want cards left that deal with guns and punching people because that's what you're good at. So if it ends up that what's left is cards that are good at that attack us, you know, based on our wit, then we both get screwed. So I was thinking, you know, there would have to be a way to, in order to have like a multiple path type thing, if we each had different skill sets, or maybe we work towards those skill sets through the game, the cards left over would target those skill sets.
Hmm.
So
so if I'm good at science, I'm going to want to pick up the science cards because they're going to help me. But if I leave science cards down there and they end up being the ones that attack me, I'm going to be able to defend against them better.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, and what I'm thinking is like the obvious way to balance this would be the cards that are really good for the players, like a card that lets you draw four cards or something, would have a really weak attack. And the cards that are really kind of crap for players would have really strong attacks. So you can take the really good card if you want, but that just means you're going to get really blasted by the remaining cards.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, and so in that manner, it becomes this kind of semi-cooperative game where it's like, dude, you really can't take that because we can't beat this. You know, you really have to take this. And then the guy's like, I don't care about you people. I'm going to take it anyway. It doesn't, whatever. I don't care. I can survive it. Maybe you can't. Maybe it's a fighting game. Maybe it's, I don't know.
Like the Goonies for this game. Like you're trying to like get to a treasure or something.
And, sure.
You know, the one dude can like do stuff. One does guys, the truffle shuffle, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, I like that. Yeah.
Well, and the thing that I think of is a predator and prey kind of thing in the wild, like, you know, like a mouse guard kind of setting where you're the adventuring hero rodents and you might be getting attacked by birds or eagles and coyotes and stuff.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
That's the first thing that came to my mind.
I like it. Okay. Hmm.
So one of the things I just want to point out here that's really interesting to me is, so Chevy here has designed a game without theme based on the mechanics, uh-huh. and it's really easy to just come up with theme ideas for this. And this is something Rob and I both talk that we can struggle with sometimes.
Yeah, we sure do.
So I just wanted to point that out. I don't have any comments.
Yeah, normally about. this is almost counterintuitive to the way I normally do things. Normally I come up with a theme that I really want to see as a game, and then I work on that. But lately I've had this rash of just doing stuff on a whim kind of thing. And, I've been keeping notes. I try to keep notes when I have an idea. If I don't have time to work on it right then and there, I just write down some notes and move on. So I have like a file of just random thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the one that's been at the top of that pile for a while now. So yeah. It was literally like, I think, and honestly, I think it came to me as I was trying to help a person work on his cooperative game, and he was really struggling with a way to make the game react to the players without just having dice rolls or mm-hmm. random card draws, because that's how most cooperative games, you're just up against a random deck that doesn't really, there's no intelligence to it. So to fake intelligence, we add a crap load of randomness.
Yeah, right.
So in my head, I thought, how can I fake intelligence? Well, what if the players are the ones who decide what the game does, not the deck of cards? We're going to deal out, if there's three of us playing and we deal out five cards, we get to choose which two cards we have to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
But that choice affects our future turn. So maybe I really don't care if we get beat up this turn because I really need this card. Or maybe we really just have to work together because we simply cannot survive the turn if we're attacked by this thing. And so now I don't need to add dice. I don't need to add a 500-card deck. I have a compact game that is semi-cooperative, or it could be straight full-on cooperative.
I think the only thing about straight full-on cooperative is you're going to lose some of that. It's a lot easier to take one for the team.
Right.
If you're all on the same team, like Forbidden Island is a good example where, you know, if I have to get stuck somewhere and not do anything for a turn to help my other players out, I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But if I'm trying to beat you.
Yeah, no, exactly.
It makes it burn that much more, you know?
Yeah,
it does. It definitely does. We play Castle Panic. Me and my daughter played Castle Panic, and we played it cooperative once and semi-cooperative once. And she immediately after that, she never wanted to play a cooperative again. She's like, it was way more fun when I was trying to beat you. And I was like, okay. And so, you know, I agree with that. And I think this game could be played either way, honestly. Whatever comes out of this, if I work, you know, on it in the future, it could easily go either way. But in my head, I really want it to be a semi-cooperative game. I really want it to be, I need your help, but if you die, so be it, because I'm going to win. So, like I said, it's really just a matter of trying to find a way to make a game engine without it just being randomness. So, yeah. If the players are the ones who ultimately get to decide what the game does from a limited set of choices.
Yeah, that clicks for me. I really like the way that sounds. Yeah, and I love that just that simplicity of that.
Yeah, I think, like, honestly, the game could be nothing more than a deck of, you know, 54 poker cards and
figure out a
way to make that work. I haven't really thought about much more beyond the fact that it's such a simple concept.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, some kind of a hit point tracker or something, depending on how the adventure is handled, you know?
Sure.
Yeah. Sure. Boy, I like that a lot.
So if we start off, I mean, you know, maybe there's a set of characters, and so each character has a, you know, base couple sets of skills, or, you know, right. Maybe we all have the same skills, but we just have different variables in those skills. So maybe we all have fighting, you know, intelligence and, I don't know, luck. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, but we just have different variables, and then the cards either buff those or we get to hold them for future turns or whatever. And then the opposing cards are like, hey, if you don't have 5 luck, then you take a point of damage.
Well, and you might even be able to avoid the damage system altogether, and just every time you get hit by a game state card and it affects you, you just have to add that to your stack, and if you net out to 0 between that and your positives, then you're out.
Sure.
I mean, that would be... Then you don't even have to have a hit point tracker, right?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, the other thing I'm thinking is that if you're thinking about these different types of attacks, you know, you're saying science or muscles or whatever, you know, if we think of it, say, well, let's put elemental stuff on it, earth and fire and air and water. And so you have all the red cards all the fire cards have a red border, and all the earth cards have a brown border. And you were saying you could start every character out the same, and then based on what cards you take, that gives you an affinity in your pile toward what your bonuses are. And so let's say I get 3 rounds in the game and I have 3 brown cards that I've used, and I have those kind of on my used pile, but now I'm on to turn 4, and if I now pick up a brown card. Since I've already used brown three times before, I'm going to get a +3 to whatever my option is for this brown card.
You know?
So you could kind of, you know, min-max it that way, or you could spread yourself out wide and kind of be a jack of all trades.
Sure.
You know, be a way to approach that.
I still think one of the elements should be punching.
Well, yeah, punching is fun.
So there's punching and explosions and I don't know what the other one would be.
Guns.
Yeah, guns, punching, explosions. Those are the three things.
Maybe car chases.
Okay, yeah, I like that. Yeah. Maybe card chases are just the they're like the counterspell cards. You get to play one to just bypass an attack or something like that. You know? Auto win the attack.
Yeah, and
the only, so in my head I thought this attack would affect everybody as a whole.
Yeah.
Simply because I wanted there to be a way for maybe that attack comes out that's so strong it could kill us all if we don't draft it. But the card's terrible. Maybe even the card's even a bad card. Like, if you take it, it hurts you. But if you don't take it, we all die. So who's going to be the one to take it?
Who's going to
be, you know?
Every time.
So my drawback to the idea of the attack going in your pile would be that only affects one player. So I'd like to, you know, in my head, I thought these attacks would be like group attacks. So
yeah, I like that better.
You know, it comes out and it's like, if you don't have 10 science, you take 5 damage. So everybody counts up. Oh, I have a 12. Oh, I only have 7, you know, or whatever. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. And I mean, to throw a hit point tracker in that case would be,
shouldn't be too tough.
Pretty easy.
I mean, yeah.
Really 20 sided die done.
Yeah.
Throw 4 of those in, and the game is complete.
Right.
4
right.
dice, deck of cards, plus the characters.
Mm-hmm.
Hey.
Yeah.
Hey.
Mm. So we need... Let's keep doing that.
Yeah.
I'm just saying, you could... That would be a pretty cheap game to manufacture.
It sure would. So let's...
Yeah, I was not trying to make it complex.
Yeah.
Initially, I had a board idea in mind, and the cards would allow you to move, and all. And I'm like, no, that's just no, not needed.
Mm-hmm.
Just simplify it down to maybe even just a deck of cards, and like you said, a couple 20-sided die, or you know, some beads or something, just to keep track of health, and that's it.
Yeah. So you wanted some help coming up with a name. So, let's see. The name could be The Awesome Adventure.
I like it.
Yeah. There.
How descriptive.
I'm inspired by Kingdom Death.
Punches, bullets, and bombs.
There you go.
And if you wanted to sell more copies, it could be Punches, Bullets, Bombs, and Blondes.
Yes.
Yeah.
If you would sell 10 million more copies. Especially if the blondes were actually anime chicks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know.
Hey,
if it's anime, I think you auto win, right?
Basically.
In Kickstarter,
yeah. Yeah, for sure.
With miniatures.
Yeah.
There's gotta be miniatures involved.
Right.
Custom dice, blonde anime chicks and miniatures, and we millions. I mean, we just steamroll Kickstarter, right?
Oh yeah.
Well, no, I think doing a deck of cards would probably be the, like, honestly, that's what I would much rather see. Just a simplified game, kind of like almost like Colorado. You draft a card and give it to somebody and you go, and that's it. It just moves. And so you take your card, everybody takes their card, we face off against the other things and just keep going until somebody wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like that it sounds fast-paced, too.
Yeah, and so I think if you have player elimination, it's not really that big of a deal. Kind of like King of Tokyo, even if you're first out, you're sitting there for 5 whole minutes while the rest of the game takes place, and it's no big deal.
Yeah.
As opposed to, all right, I'm going to go home while you guys finish the game. Keep going, roll through it, and we're done.
Yeah, we've talked about that before, how much we hate player elimination, but as long as it's not going to take too long, then it's probably okay.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the two ways player elimination are okay is, like you said, one, if it doesn't take too long, and two, if you get out because it's your fault. If you make a stupid choice,
sure,
and that makes you lose, because then that's your punishment, is you have to sit there and watch other people have fun.
Right. Yeah.
Cool. Good stuff, man.
Thanks.
Yeah. I would play that game, whatever theme it had.
Absolutely. I'm jealous. I wish I'd thought of that.
I might try and like mock it up with just generic, like, you know, circles, triangles, and squares or something. See what happens.
Yeah, for sure.
That's cool. Just, yeah, it would be fun
to
try
give it
that.
A go. It might be something I do. We'll see.
Cool.
My Twitter will become alive if I do. I'm sure.
Absolutely.
I tend to get excited about projects.
Yeah, you were talking about your tank game recently, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah.
I get it sitting right here, actually.
Yeah, awesome.
I've been kind of carrying it around the house with me everywhere I go.
Just keep it in your pocket just in case.
Well, this is like I've had this artist friend since the late '90s. We met online. Like, he's been literally an online friend for well over a decade, probably a decade and a half. And he's a really good artist. And for pretty much everything I've done since then, he's done some portion of it for me. He's done the logos. He's done, you know, card art for me, or layout and stuff like that. So I think this one is the very first time I've done 100% of the work myself.
Hmm.
From the design to the box to the art to the cards, it's 100% my work. And so I'm well, not the fonts. I stole the fonts. Okay. Well, I used Arial Black. All right, you got me at Microsoft.
I think that's okay.
You should have used, yeah, Comic Sans.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. I'm kidding.
But so I'm this one, like, I haven't even play tested the game yet with other people at all. No, like, I semi showed the idea to somebody and that was it. But nobody else has even played this game, but it's completely 100% done. So I tend to go a little bit overboard.
Can you give us a basic, I mean, I hate to talk about this in the show and then not tell the listeners what we're talking about. So can you give us a quick blurb on this?
Okay, so Tuesday Night Tanks is the name of the game. It was designed on a whim for the GameCrafter map building contest. The game comes with 6 map cards that are all different and double-sided. You shuffle them up, pick 4, whatever you want to do. Basically, you're going to put 4 in a 2x2 pattern, and that's the arena. Tuesday Night Tanks, the idea is it's a professional tank fighting league of... Yes, exactly. Massive damage. On the maps, you have impassable terrain, which is water. Tankers don't go in water because it hurts their tanks. You have buildings, which you can hide behind or even in. Shrubbery, which can be destroyed throughout the course of the game, but you can also hide behind it. And barrels, which are full of explosives, just for spectators' fun. So at the start of the game, you set the map out. You put your tanks, each player picks a tank and puts it on their starting square. And then there's a deck of cards, and the game is played very much like Robo Rally or Wings of War, Star Wars, the X-Wing miniatures game. You're going to have a hand of 4 cards. You're going to pick 1 to be your movement action and pick 1 to be your fire action. Place them face down in front of you. Everybody reveals their move. You move exactly as it's depicted on the cards. So maybe it's over 2 squares, up 2 squares, or whatever. You do your movement. Any hedges you roll through get removed from the game. If you roll through a barrel, it explodes and you take damage. After everybody's moved, everybody gets to fire. So you flip over your fire card and you'll shoot in one of the directions shown up to the distance shown. Tanks have 3 health. If you lose all your health, you die. And there's also a hill in the middle of the map. And if you can stay on that hill for a turn, you can win the game that way.
Ah, okay.
So theoretically, it's a very fast game. It doesn't take too long to play. When I say fast, I'm going to say like probably 30 minutes total.
Okay.
That's just a rough guess because I've only ever played it with myself. Also, the Combat Tankers Division, which is the name of the league that runs Tuesday Night Tanks, developed, I call them high impact, low penetration rounds. So when your tank gets hit, it gets knocked back a square. So that makes it difficult to stay on the hill.
Got it.
Getting a hill victory is pretty impressive.
So it's not either.
You can also knock people back into barrels or into the water and they take damage that way too. So
it's either last man standing or king of the hill.
Yes.
Got
yes.
It.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah, it sounds great.
Yeah, and so it's what is amusing is I designed this game in a day, literally one day from about 10 in the morning until 10 at night. I had the game design, the card art done, very rough board art done, and a Vassal module completed so that I could play test him.
Man. you're a monster.
Yeah, and so I designed all this, and then last week I discovered World of Tanks, which is basically the exact same game except as a video game.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, in World of Tanks, there's a King of the Hill mechanic where you can win by killing everybody. Hey, what do you know?
Hey. That's great.
So I'm insanely excited for it. I'm going to take it to Protospiel. That'll probably be the I'll probably play test it tomorrow. But if it tests well, I hope it tests well. I'll probably release it on GameCrafter eventually.
Cool.
I don't know that it's something publishers will be interested in. Maybe. Who knows?
Yeah. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, right. I think we're kind of running low on time here. So, Chevy, why don't you give us a plug here for your Twitter and your website? How can people find you?
Twitter is usually the easiest. It's at Chevy Dodd, Cheveedodd. I talk a lot more on there than I do my website. In fact, I haven't updated my website in about a month, which makes me feel really icky, but I got to do it. My website is simply www.chevydodd.com. Again, Cheveedodd.com. And on there, I usually blog and post pictures as games progress. I also have print and play versions of games on there. I show my artwork that I've done for other people, just about everything. A lot of it is aggregated from my Twitter. So,
right on.
Twitter's the easy way.
Okay, cool. We like Twitter.
We do. And also your game Scallywags.
Scallywags. Where can we find that?
Scallywags should be in most game stores. Hopefully, if they carry Game Right games, you'll have it there. If not, it's available on Amazon.com. And might be on Barnes & Noble already. I haven't actually checked that in a while.
Cool. Yeah, we like Game Right games. We each have several of them, and they make a good product.
Yes, they make an amazing product.
Yeah.
If you have a game design that is fitting for them, I really suggest contacting them. They're an amazing publisher to work with.
Yeah, good news.
They are very designer friendly.
Good
job. All the way through and through. So cool. I would recommend anybody to contact them.
Right on. Well, hey, Chevy, thanks so much for hanging out with us tonight. We appreciate it, man.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was awesome.
No problem. And thank you to all of our listeners for listening to the show. If you want to get in touch with us, you can check us out on our website, which is buildingthegamepodcast.com. You can also send us an email to buildingthegamepodcast@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter @podcastbtg. Jason is @JASlingerland, and I am @poorly_design. And of course, Chevy is @ChevyDodd. What am I forgetting, Jason?
Well, one thing we want to remind the listeners of is to tweet us at our @podcastbtg account that you just mentioned. You tweet us either a game title or a game mechanic. Mm-hmm. You can do multiples. Just do them all separate for us if you don't mind so that we can categorize them real easy.
Yep.
What we're doing with this is Rob and I are going to take all those game names that you came in, these fake names you came up with for games, and also the mechanics you sent. We're going to put them all in a hat. We're going to draw a game name and two mechanics for each of us.
Yep.
And then we're going to do pitches again with those like we did last time where we challenged each other. We had such a good time with that, and we felt like it really kind of stretched our designer brains.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, just a reminder for that for everybody.
Yep. We have a few weeks left here to get your submissions in.
Yep.
Yep. That's all we got. So thank you again, everybody, for listening. And thank you again, Chevy, for hanging out with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Everybody have a good one. Watch out! Building the Game is a co-production of Imminent Entertainment and Poorly Designed Studios.
All the ideas presented by Rob and Jason are the property of the Building the Game podcast.
Next time on Building the Game.
Did you hear have you heard the newest episode yet where Rob pitches the hibachi game?
No, I don't think I did.
Okay.